You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places and elections of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. If you voted in this year's California primary, and if you look at the turnout numbers, maybe you didn't, the results of those votes are still coming in. A quarter or less of registered voters in L.A. County turned a ballot in for mayor of L.A., for a slew of city council seats, L.A. County sheriff, county supervisor. Well, the numbers are still being tallied, with some races still being decided. Others have been called already. In that mayor's race, it's down to two candidates in a runoff. Billionaire developer Rick Caruso, who spent $40 million of his own money on the campaign.
We will not allow this city to decline. We have the power to change direction of Los Angeles, and that's the way we're voting.
And then there's Congresswoman Karen Bass, who's making Caruso's financial and political largesse a campaign issue.
It's hard to defeat passionate door knockers, no matter how much money is spent.
So let's get into it. Fernando Guerra is professor of political science and director of the Center of the Study of Los Angeles over at Loyola Marymount University. Hey, Fernando.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Julia Wick is the Metro reporter for the LA Times. She's been keeping tabs on the mayor's race and others in the city and county as well. Hey, Julia.
Hello, happy to be here.
Fernando, I'm going to start with you. Lower turnout, I think everybody expected that. Are you surprised by the low turnout, or do you think it was actually better than what we've seen in the past?
So I'm not surprised with a turnout. The data indicated that 17% of all mail-in ballots had already been received before yesterday, and that should only be about 40% of the ballot. So I expect about, you know, even maybe higher than 25%. It's not great, but it's not as low as the last time we had an open mayoral election in 2013. If you remember Garcetti-Gruhl, the primary only had 21% and the general 23%. So this is much higher than that. And it's also even higher than 2014 when Governor Brown was running for re-election. That had a real low turnout in LA County, about 17%. This is going to be higher than that. Not a great turnout, but nowhere near the historic lows.
What do you see, Fernando, in terms of demographic breakdown? I mean, who took the time to vote in this primary?
So we have a lot of data on that. And of course, as we would expect, people over 65% were voting like at a 33% clip. Whites were voting at a, like a 22% clip compared to Latinos, which were way down. Now, a lot of that is early data, and Latinos are notoriously known for late deciders, given the lack of communication from campaigns to Latino voters. So all the conventional hypotheses that we have, older, white, more income geographically in the West, all of those were higher than compared to younger, working class, Latino, African Americans. So the typical hypothesis, unfortunately, reinforced with this election.
Julia Wick, do you think that played into the numbers that we saw, you know, vis-a-vis the mayor's race, the fact that Caruso did pretty well, right? We're in the low 40s as far as, I mean, he didn't win outright, but he did get quite a few votes.
I think it's hard to say. I think, you know, there's been a bit of a knee-jerk reaction that Caruso's base is white Westsiders, but I think he's actually going to, when the final kind of analysis is done, his message, I think, has really resonated with a lot of Asian and Latino voters, particularly his concern, his message around safety. So I think it's too early to say.
It's too early to say. You were at his party last night at the Grove, which is the development that he, you know, initiated, and he's got several developments all across Southern California. What was that like?
It was quite a scene. It was one of the more surreal political events I've ever covered. They had about half the mall shut down with an unbelievable amount of security, you know, bomb sniffing dogs, probably dozens of security people. And on one side, the mall was still open. People were, you know, going to Sephora and going to the movies. And on the other side, there was this very fancy party. He had one of the more interesting images was he created a backdrop that was a real dress for the job you want backdrop. that basically looked almost like a city hall podium, albeit with his campaign logos, but had, you know, state flag, city flag, US flag, a wooden podium. And then looming above that was the blinking Grove sign and the Cheesecake Factory, which was just kind of a wild way to hear a candidate speak. Very interesting.
It sounds like, yeah, quite a juxtaposition there, and maybe a bit surreal as well. I wonder, you know, what, and you heard Karen Bass say, we're going to be outspent, but we're going to be knocking on the doors. This is a grassroots campaign. Does that factor into this? And do you think, I mean, what's going to play into this race? Is it going to be Caruso is trying to buy this election? Is that what Bass is going after?
That is absolutely, you know, something I have heard her and her supporters say. And Caruso spending has very much dominated the race. I think what will be really interesting is it's very easy, or not easy, but you can to some degree control the message during a short period of time when you have your ads on every TV channel, any screen someone looks at. This next stretch is 5 months. It's quite a bit longer. So I don't think he's going to be able to have the same amount of control over his message, which I think will be interesting. His speech was he really alternated between extremes of darkness and light in the speech he gave at his party, kind of contrasting these romantic tropes about Los Angeles as a city where dreams can come true with very stark images of homelessness and crime, and really presenting himself as the person who can fix these things, and as the lead he has, which now looks to be about 5 points, as kind of a referendum on Angelinos wanting change and being fed up with the system as it exists.
Fernando, I want to get into the sheriff's race. There were 9 candidates running, 8 of them trying to unseat the incumbent sheriff, Alex Villanueva. Villanueva did not manage to get the 50% he needed to win outright. Come November, it looks like he's going to face off, at least at this moment, against former Long Beach Police Chief Robert Luna. So any thoughts on this one, Fernando?
Yes. Sheriff Villanueva totally underperformed. 2/3 of L.A. County voters said they want to see somebody else being sheriff. He's going to be in the runoff. I think Robert Luna, who's not that far behind him, is going to be, in my mind, the front runner. The vast majority of people who voted for others will, I think, support him. The electorate in November is going to be much younger, more progressive. I don't see how Sheriff Villanueva pulls himself out of this electoral death spiral. You know, it's obviously way too early to call, but I, you know, Luna is, in my mind, the front runner, and by a lot.
I mean, so with law and order, though, on the ballot this year, it seems, when people are concerned about crime, people are concerned about homelessness, I mean, could that work in Villanueva's favor going into the fall?
Well, certainly it's at the height, that issue is at the height right now and should have been in the forefront of the primary voters. It might actually be lessened in November if certain things occur. I'm not predicting that. And so if he couldn't get voters based on our current homelessness issues and crime issues, I doubt he's going to be able to do it in November. And remember, he's going to be going up against a former police chief who is also law enforcement, also talking about crime, et cetera. And so I just don't know what his message could be. And it's not only that, his message, number one, hasn't resonated. And then how he delivers it also doesn't particularly resonate in this heavily Democratic county. I just don't see the strategy, the issues for him to be able to pull this off. Obviously, upsets occur, but I think it would be an upset if Villanueva were to win re-election in November.
Fernando, let's also talk about the LA Board of Supervisors race, the seat in the 3rd District. This is Sheila Kuehl's seat. She's termed out San Fernando Valley, parts of the West Side. State Senator Bob Hertzberg, West Hollywood City Council member Lindsay Horvath will face off against one another. Tell us about this race and what went into it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I thought Lindsay Horvath was a shoe-in because she represents the southern part of the district. Because of redistricting, this district was moved quite a bit, a lot more into the valley. And then we had two strong state legislators, actually state senators representing the Valley. And I thought they were going to be fighting out for the Valley vote. So I think Bob Hertzberg overperformed it a little bit better than I expected. But it's going to be a tough race. You're going to have a lot of people endorsing Lindsay Horvath. It's really the local approach to politics versus the more state approach given Hertzberg is going to be incredibly competitive. Two good candidates, two good Democrats. Looking forward to seeing how it unfolds.
Julia Wick, let's look at the LA City Council races. It's unusual for established incumbents to be ousted. Three of the five sitting council members clearly got the 50% plus one they needed to stay in office. I'm talking about Bob Blumenfield and Monica Rodriguez in the Valley, Curran Price in South LA. But in District 13, this is an interesting one, which runs from Hollywood into Silver Lake and Echo Park. Mitch O'Farrell is facing a runoff in November against Hugo Soto Martinez. Tell us about the challenger and what's happening there in that district.
Yes, that has been, in my view, one of the more interesting council races this cycle. It's a really crowded race. You've had one candidate challenging Councilmember O'Farrell from the right, and the rest really coming at him from the left with a number of progressive challengers with pretty serious campaigns. And the challenger who made it into the runoff with who just below Councilmember O'Farrell and with a gap that really has been dwindling as more ballots have been coming in is a longtime organizer with Unite Here, Local 11, which represents hotel workers, named Hugo Soto Martinez. He was endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America, Los Angeles. He has a real background in organizing the labor movement. So really has run a grassroots campaign, very volunteer heavy. I covered him a bit and went out to some of his canvassing and went over actually to the DSA party last night after the Grove, which was a very interesting change of pace. And that party, which was not Hugo's official party, but him and his campaign brought over their extra beer from the official party to the DSA party afterwards and had kind of the ethos of like a DIY punk show almost, where, you know, organizers were really, it was a lot of people who'd worked both for Hugo in CD13 and for Ulysses Hernandez, who is in, was challenging Councilmember Gil Cedillo in CD1, and it looks very, very unlikely that she will make it into a runoff. It looks like he has won outright unless, you know, something crazy happens with ballots coming in.
Gil Cedillo in District 1.
Yes, exactly.
With 50 plus 1. It's looking that way, but again, anything could happen. We still have some votes to count. Any final thoughts before we let y'all go? So many races. Obviously, we can't get to all of them. But Fernando, did anything stick out to you about this election and what we're going to deal with in November?
Yes, in terms of long-term LA politics, is exactly what Julia was just talking about. You just saw the future of LA politics with progressives having viable candidates that are going to make an impact. These young progressives, Soto Martinez, Sandoval in the 15th, Darling in the 11th, if they win, they would form a formidable coalition along with Rahman in the LA City Council. I'm not saying they're going to win, but the fact that they're so competitive, and don't forget, the top vote getter for city controller was also a young progressive. The future of LA politics began with this election. When we'll be talking about that historically, we won't be talking about Caruso. We'll be talking about the new politics in electoral sense began in 2020.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on and talking to us today. Fernando Guerra, professor of political science and director of the Center of the Study of Los Angeles over at Loyola Marymount. Julia Wick, Metro reporter for the LA Times. Really appreciate it. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, coming up, one of the many things that'll factor into this year's runoff elections is inflation. And for food trucks, stands, and other places, well, the price of their food is making the price of your food go up. That's yours on GLA on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. What is your favorite only in LA thing to eat? In a city of people cooking and selling small batches of food inspired by the flavors of the world, there are a lot of options, from street dogs to kimchi. But of course, with inflation these days, you've probably noticed that food is getting more expensive, just like everything else. And you better believe that the people who make it are aware of those rising prices.
It's really hard. I know, it's not only in the food industry. It's a lot of industry that we are just living this situation right now.
Socorro Manzano runs a Mexican restaurant that specializes in food from Oaxaca. It's a colorful place in North Hollywood that's hard to miss. It has a bright yellow roof, red walls, and a big sign that reads, Oaxacan Food. Seasoned restaurant owners such as Manzano know fluctuating prices are just a part of the job. But if you look a little closer, you'll see something very unusual is happening. Record inflation affects not just one or two ingredients that she cooks with, but all parts of businesses like hers at the same time. That's why it's going to cost you more to eat Manzano's mole and all those other locally made foods at mom-and-pop shops all across Greater L.A. KCRW's Megan Jamerson has this report on why the prices you pay for locally made food are headed in one direction, and that's up.
Inside the kitchen of Tacos Manzano in North Hollywood, a cook is busy grilling chilies for mole that will be served fresh later today.
People love our mole. We make it from scratch, everything, and also a lot of ingredients from Oaxaca, too.
Socorro Manzano started this business with her younger brother, Jesus, 20 years ago. Together, they kept the business open during the early days of the pandemic shutdown, working with the city to provide hundreds of meals a week for homebound seniors. Now, she faces a new challenge with inflation. First, it was the price of takeout boxes. Then she reduced her personal income to increase the wages of her 10 employees. And now, wholesale ingredients are on average up 11% since last year, like chilies, tortillas, cheese, and meat, like beef tongue.
The beef tongue used to be, let's say, $3, and now it's $12 a pound. And the meat, the chicken, all the meats has been increasing like a triple.
So she raised prices in May between 50 cents and a dollar. A single taco is now $2.25, and a chicken mole combo plate with rice and beans is $13. Manzano says customers immediately cut back on how much they order.
Instead of buying three tacos or four tacos, now they're going to buy one. So instead of buying a drink, now they say, no, just a cup of water.
But Manzano says even though people are spending less, she still has a steady stream of regulars, which she credits to the mutual sense of loyalty built up between the community and the restaurant over the decades.
They are here every day to eat our food. They love our food. They like our taste. And they understand that we are doing our best for our customers.
With all the costs that go into operating small restaurants at a record high, places with strong customer loyalty, like Tacos Manzano, have the best chance of survival, says Christiana Schroeter. She is an economist at Cal State San Luis Obispo, where she teaches courses on innovation and entrepreneurship in food supply chain.
The businesses really have the unique opportunity, especially small businesses, in building relationship with consumers and really showing them that, look, we need your support through this hard time. So the product that you are receiving is amazing. It's not something that's mass produced. Maybe it really has all the love and the input, and maybe it's even a family business in there. And you need to support local, and you need to make sure that we stay afloat and that we are going to keep going through these maybe a little bit more challenging times.
She also advises small food producers to see if they could do without those super expensive ingredients like beef tongue and find a way to satisfy customers.
given the current recipe, there might be a challenge. It might be very expensive or maybe even impossible to do it the way that we used to do it. But maybe we can tweak things a little bit. And it might actually lead to an outcome that consumers are going to embrace even more.
Oscar Ochoa knows exactly what Schroeder is talking about and is trying this kind of innovation.
What are you selling, hot sauce?
Yes, hot sauce.
Ochoa sells kind of fancy hot sauce and salsas at farmers markets throughout LA. His business is called El Machete.
Yeah, avo $9 for the 16 ounce. Prescab are doing $6.50.
One of his most popular items is that $9 avocado salsa. And the price of the avocados needed to make it have soared over the last year. Millennials, you know. But seriously, he buys boxes of 48 avocados each, which are now double the price.
Let's just say about a year ago, $45. And I've seen as high as $95 a box.
Which adds up fast for Ochoa.
So I'm paying about $800 more per month just on avocados. And so then one of my challenges becomes, you know, how do I make up for those $800, right?
So here comes that pressure to reassess expenses. Ochoa took a look at his ingredients for wiggle room to make up the cost of avocados.
Like, for example, I was using Himalayan pink salt on all my stuff. And now I'm using a Mediterranean sea salt.
A price savings of $10 per 5-pound container. And then there's onions.
White onions versus red onions.
Another $10 saved.
When you start adding all those costs up per month, you're like, okay, that's another like $250 that I'm saving to offset the $800 that I'm overspending just on avocados alone. Let's not get into the gas yet.
Yeah, the average gas price is well over $6 a gallon these days, which is a big hit to Ochoa's budget when he's making trips to 3 farmers markets a week, all in different parts of L.A. Out of options, Ochoa finally raised prices by 50 cents in May. He says he felt a responsibility to warn customers several weeks ahead of time that the increase was coming.
And I think because I feel like they're partners in the business, that's why I feel that responsibility, because I feel they are partners in the business. Without them, I wouldn't survive. I wouldn't be able to provide.
Thankfully,
jobs.
His popularity at farmers markets like this one at Los Angeles State Historic Park in Chinatown is helping him ride out inflation.
So this is the
manifesto.
Manifesto. Okay.
By the way, that was my first hot sauce ever. That's what I call the manifesto. It was my declaration to LA.
And that day, Ochoa sold out all the fresh salsa he brought in his jumbo ice chest. For KCRW, I'm Megan J. Merson.
That's going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, I know you've seen the sign on telephone and traffic poles, God this, Jesus that. Well, they preach the gospel one piece of cardboard at a time. Meet the folks who go around taking those signs down. And the pushback that they get, that's tomorrow on Greater LA. How about a visit to our website, kcrw.com/GLA. Check us out, ask questions, share your thoughts, even subscribe to the podcast at kcrw.com/GLA. And here's something we want your input on. The Hollywood Bowl turns 100 this year. Are there any experiences there at the Bowl? A show, an LA film performance, a movie screening, whatever, that is memorable for you to tell us about? Well, you can do that at our website, kcrw.com/askgreaterla. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludman, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made this evening's show happen. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears and time. Have a great night.